And thank you. Recently, I did two trips with Executive Director the Sailor, when I just want to, your reputation succeeds you. You know, they talk great things about you, and our sister agency partners are also talk great things about you. I just want to tell you that. Thank you. Thank you for the report. So now to 26, Measure D financing options.
Thank you, Chair Montesino. I will kick this item off, and I would like to give a little bit of context and background to this item. So the previous executive director, Guy Preston, originally, when he started with the agency, he brought up this idea of financing against Measure revenues and prepared the Measure D strategic implementation plan. And had a whole process to kind of educate the commission about financing. And then in 2022, the RTC actually programmed Measure D and essentially over-programmed Measure D and committed to financing against future revenues. And this is a very common practice for agencies like ours to who are delivering projects faster than revenues, like pay as you go revenues can keep up. So with that, that's kind of the history. Just wanted to let you know kind of the background of we've already kind of made these commitments before applying for grants for Coastal Rail Trail and highway projects. And so we want to reintroduce this item to the commission with some details by staff and our financial advisor consultants. And then we'll be bringing more detailed information to the commission in the fall about the project statuses and timing of the financing. So with that, Grace Blakeslee, Supervising Transportation Planner, is here to start us off.
Yeah, thank you, Sarah, for that introduction. That frames it up really well. I think Melissa was going to pull up our slides for the presentation.
Melissa Schick is here from Canon, who's our financial consultant who's helping us with this funding education today.
Okay. Good morning, Commissioners. Grace Blakeslee again. Go ahead and go to the next slide, and I'll kick us off with a brief overview of Measure D and reviewing with you what is currently programmed in the Measure D five-year plan for the Highway 1 and the active transportation categories to give you an idea of what RTC's current commitments are. And as Sarah mentioned, we did commit to funding projects in the highway and active transportation category that exceed our pay-as-you-go capacity, and which is why we're here to talk about financing. For those who are not familiar with Measure D, it was approved by two-thirds of the voters in 2016. That provides a lot of the resources we have to deliver the transportation projects that folks see under construction today. Our current estimate for annual revenues for Measure D is $27 million per year. We annually update our five-year program of projects. We typically do a full update for our five-year plan in November timeframe. We occasionally come to you with other updates as needed to fund keep our projects moving forward. And we also have a strategic implementation plan that we complete every 5 years as well to look at strategic investments for the Measure D funds. And we are aware that Measure D revenues are not sufficient to fund all of the transportation needs in our county, even just the regional transportation needs. Measure D has a specific expenditure plan, and I'll just briefly go over that. Next slide. So the expenditure plan dedicates 30% of the funds for neighborhood projects. These funds are distributed directly to our local jurisdictions. Another 20% for transit and senior transportation, which primarily goes to the metro as well as community bridges. 25% of the revenues are dedicated to the highway category of projects. 17% to the active transportation category, which is funding for the Coastal Rail Trail projects and MBSST, and then 8% is for rail corridor preservation and related planning studies. Next slide. So what we've estimated currently is the estimated revenue under the highway category for the total life of Measure D, which would extend through 2046-47, is $250 million. We've programmed $10.5 million. To the Soquel 41st Auxiliary Lane Project, 22.5 to the Bay Porter to State Park Auxiliary Lane Project, and State Park to Freedom Boulevard Auxiliary Lane Project and Bus on Shoulder Project. We've committed to $124 million match to a state funded grant that there is pending award, hopefully, and we will know in end of May, June time period. So the total committed Measure D highway category is $162 million. This again is over the funding of the $250 million in estimated revenue is over the life of Measure D, so we cannot fund these projects without considering financing in the short term. Next slide. Similarly, for the active transportation category, we've estimated revenues at $174 million. We've dispersed those funds to a variety of coastal rail trail projects, including $5.5 million in the city of Watsonville for segment 18. The county of Santa Cruz, segments 10 and 11, we've dedicated approximately $18 million. City of Santa Cruz, segments 7, 8, and 9, $7.2 million. Segment 5, $8.5 million, which is on the north coast of Santa Cruz County. For TC-led project segment 12, we have a program $12.8 million. And also we have corridor management oversight and planning, which is approximately programmed $15 million. We did give a report to the commission in June looking at different scenarios for programming Measure D funds. So I'm happy to review that with folks if they have questions. Again, the funding that we currently have programmed is more than it's available on the pay-as-you-go capacity. I wanted to point out that the funds we have programmed for highway and active transportation have leveraged to date over $155 million in state and federal funds. And should we be successful with our current grant application to the state for SB1 funding, we would add another $125 million to that award for a total leverage of 250 plus state and federal funds leveraged by our local Measure D. So due to the grant successes that we've had and hopefully future grant success we'll have this year, we know that we will begin construction in 2027 on many of these projects. And again, we will not have that sufficient pay as you go to cover these costs over the next 5 years. As Sarah mentioned, staff will bring more information about any other short-term borrowing needs in the fall as part of the Measure D five-year plan update. And with that, hopefully that frames it up for you. We'll pass it over to KNN, our financial advisor, to talk about some of the options that the RTC could look at for financing. Unless, Sarah, did you have anything else you want to add? Okay.
Great. Thank you, Grace and Sarah. This is David Leifer with KNN. Getting an echo. I hope you're able to hear me okay. I'm joined by Melissa Schick, and we are the commission's municipal advisor. And today we're going to just make a brief presentation with an introduction to the concepts surrounding bonding. And then, as Sarah mentioned, in the fall, we'll be back with more specifics once more is known about the specific projects and the financing plan for these projects. So next slide, Melissa. Thank you. Just a brief introduction to the bonding. So we're talking about potentially bonding secured by the measure sales tax, and it's a form of municipal bond. And when we talk about a municipal bond, really it's just a form of loan from a lender, perhaps an institutional investor, to the commission in this case, but to a municipality generally. And the reasons that municipal bonds are used fairly widely by local governments vary, but they focus largely on accelerating the delivery of a capital project versus waiting to accumulate funds on a pay-as-you-go basis. And I have a slide in a minute that illustrates that better. Some of the other rationales, of course, are to spread the cost of a capital project over the useful life of a particular asset and to ensure that those costs are effectively paid over time by the variety of users that benefit from the project. And of course, in some cases, and this might be the situation today, there's an opportunity to achieve overall project cost saving, particularly in light of a high construction inflation rate that maybe exceeds the cost of borrowing or the available earnings rate on cash reserves. Municipal bonds are really used for a variety of purposes, largely capital. And in our case, we're talking about infrastructure for streets and roads and related transportation facilities. Next slide. One of the benefits that the commission has and that municipalities have is the ability to borrow on a tax-exempt basis. And so what that means is that the bondholders who are purchasing the bond and effectively lending you money, they won't be required to pay federal and in some cases state income tax on the interest that they're earning from you, that the commission will be paying on that bond. So because they're not paying income tax, as a result, they're going to be willing to lend you money at a lower cost of capital, at a lower interest rate than they would, say, to a corporate bond issuer, where they would have to pay income tax on the interest. So this is a preference in the tax code that allows local government, state and local government, to to raise capital for infrastructure projects on a preferred basis. And that's a significant saving for financing costs. As a result, because the Treasury is losing out, if you will, on tax revenue, there's various hoops that we need to jump through in order to qualify a bond as tax exempt. One of the, or two of the sort of primary requirements, first are that the money that you borrow must be spent for sort of a governmental purpose, not benefit a private user. And two, there has to be a reasonable expectation at the time that you borrow that you're going to spend the money that you borrow largely within 3 years from when you're borrowing, with some exceptions. And the idea is they don't want you to borrow today at a very low interest rate, at a preferred interest rate, and just sit on the money for 10 years and maybe even earn a positive arbitrage or spread. And so this important tax requirement guides our financing plan. We look at expenditures in sort of 3-year chunks. And it's not uncommon for some sales tax programs to have a series of borrowings over multiple years if those expenditures are going to spread out over, say, 7 to 10 years. And that's all going to be part of the financing plan that we bring back when more is known. Okay? And that whole issue of tax exemption, of course, is something that does come up in Washington every time the federal budget is discussed. But over many, many decades, of course, this preference has been protected, if you will. And I know that lots of local government lobby groups, League of Cities, NACO, CSAC, et cetera, are again advocating to preserve tax exemption for local government. So with that in mind, just talk briefly about, now let's focus in a little bit on transportation agencies in particular and the type, why they issue bonds and other forms of borrowings. First, we look at sort of two types of borrowings, first for regional projects or larger scale projects, and then there's also potential borrowing against sales taxes for local streets and roads projects. But looking at the sort of larger commission-wide regional projects, borrowings are used really for two purposes. First, as was mentioned here by Sarah and Grace, to use as matching funds, and then commitments are made to secure state and federal grants for projects, which is critical. And so you, as a self-help county, in a sense, because you have this tax, are in a better position to leverage these grants. And then two, as we mentioned, it affords you the opportunity to accelerate the delivery of these projects over just waiting for cash to accumulate on a pay-as-you-go basis. And then similarly for local streets and roads, we see bonding for streets and roads a little bit less frequent, but still it does occur, and it's used to accelerate the delivery of street projects and impacting pavement scores sooner than they would through pay-as-you-go. And so we're starting to see lots of cities and other local governments look at bonding a little bit more for local streets and roads projects. If we move on to the next slide, this is just a graphic illustration of this idea of accelerating delivery of a project. So on the top left, we have this graph. The green bars are the significant amount of capital expenditures that you might be facing with a large scale project once you're through design and engineering and maybe have construction bids in hand. And you can see that for a short term period of time, expenditures outstrip the annual sales tax revenues that come in, the blue bar, which in this case is just shown as a level amount in the hypothetical at $10 million. So we've got more money to spend than we have coming in the short term. We have a couple of options over on the right, on the top. We could, or you could, on the one hand, just spread those expenditures out, slow down the project, stretch it out so that each year you're only spending up to your available revenues. Obviously, that delays the delivery of the project, maybe enhances the cost with inflation and stretches out the time during which you could deliver the project. The second option, of course, is down below, and that's issuing a bond And that it basically increases the amount of resources you have available during that bottleneck period when the expenditures are higher. So in this case, you see the blue bar, which is now available revenues. Available revenues here include the bond proceeds as well as the annual collection of sales taxes. And now we have enough to meet the expenditure requirements in this bottleneck period, in this example, 3 years. And then over time, we're still collecting the annual revenues, maybe have a little bit less than we otherwise would because we now need to pay debt service on the bonds and pay back the bond. So we get more money up front and a little bit less over time, but still receive money over time for projects. And so this is the primary rationale for using bonding in a capital intensive program like yours. Okay, on this page, just stepping back and looking at how agencies deliver transportation projects under a voter-approved expenditure plan. These are sort of the three main buckets, and you've heard us already talk a lot about available revenues on a pay-as-you-go basis. That means just waiting for revenues to come in, accumulate, and then go out and complete the project. This works better for sort of small and recurring capital projects or annual maintenance or for projects that need to be built or can be built over a long term. But it does limit the ability to accelerate a project into sort of a single phase. You know, bucket two, of course, we've heard a lot about how successful you and your staff have been at securing state and federal grants. Clearly, grants are preferred. We don't have to pay interest back or don't even need to pay back the grant at all, typically. But we know that that's a competitive process. There's limited funds. There's timing restrictions. There's oversight, review, reporting. So there's just probably not enough of that to fund projects of the scale that are on your priority list. And so finally, there's borrowing. And we've talked about how that accelerates delivery of a project and spreads the financing costs over time and maybe minimizes construction costs. And the takeaway on this page simply is that a typical financing plan for many, many transportation agencies involves some sort of mix of all three of these. And that's what would be the case here when we come back in the fall. I think you'll see that the plan will include a mix of this. Obviously, we want to minimize the borrowing and maximize the other or optimize the other revenue sources. So with that, I'm going to hand it off to my colleague, Melissa, and she's going to carry us home here. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, David. This next slide puts the borrowing concept in the context of Measure D. And at the start of the presentation, Grace spoke of your expenditure plan. And as well as the ordinance, each of which would drive decisions around borrowing. First and foremost, just we highlight that the Measure D ordinance provides the authority for the commission to issue bonds. And within the ordinance, the purpose for issuing bonds is for capital outlay expenditures as set forth in the ordinance and the expenditure plan. So therefore, as we look at the Measure D expenditure plan and the allocation of funding to certain project and program areas, we would expect that the bonds would be used primarily for your active transportation and highway corridor programs, given that your direct allocations to cities and counties as well as the transit services are just done on a pay-go annual basis based on their respective percentage of Measure D revenues. So bonding, and we'll get to this, but looking at bonding for Measure D will really be done in the context of cash flow and capital requirements within the non-direct allocation programs. So, you know, when K&N first started working with RTC, one of the first steps we did is work with staff to develop a cash flow model specific to the Measure D program. And we simply, that model then models your expenditure plan and tracks the collection of Measure D revenues and the allocation of those revenues, one, to the direct allocation programs, but then two, to the more regional programs such as the highway and active transportation. So what we do over time is we have tracked the actual revenues that you've received and the associated expenditures, as well as the model projects the performance of the Measure D tax over time, and that projection has done so in tandem with HDL and some of the services they provide you, as well as expectations for expenditures and expenditures to your direct allocation programs, as well as expenditures with regard to projected capital projects. And then we look at, with staff, we evaluate your cash flow resources. Are there sufficient available revenues to meet expenditure requirements in any given year relative to your capital expectations and capital needs? On the next slide, just from a very high level perspective, we've extracted both revenue and expenditure data from the current cash flow model. The bars in this graph represent projected, actual and projected Measure D revenues. The blue bars are the direct allocation revenues, which are associated with the respective percentage of total Measure D revenues collected. And then the green bar are the revenues that would be allocated to the regional program. Again, highway and active transportation. The blue line represents projected expenditures within the Measure D program. And as you can see in fiscal 25 through fiscal 30, on an annual basis, expenditures are projected to exceed revenues. And those expenditures are include staff's estimate for key Measure D capital projects within the regional project areas. And so, as David mentioned in the illustrative tables earlier in the presentation, is what bonding is often used to fill the gap within when there's a mismatch between revenues and expenditures. And a bond would simply advance future Measure D regional revenues to meet near-term capital expenditure needs. So what are the primary considerations for thinking about issuing bonds? And first and foremost, it's the cash flow need. If the Measure D model is expecting peak capital expenditures associated with some of your priority projects that exceed anticipated revenue, then bonds can help address the mismatch between revenues and expenditures. Secondly, project readiness is key to issuing bonds. So you wouldn't want to issue bonds before the project are ready, even if the cash flow model anticipates expenditures associated with those projects. And what is project readiness? It's really clearing the environmental process as well as clearing the permitting process. And as David mentioned earlier in the presentation, with the issuance of tax-exempt bonds, RTC would want to make sure there's a reasonable expectation that the project is ready such that the spending of bond proceeds could occur over a reasonable period of time, that being a three-year time frame for the use of tax-exempt bond proceeds. So even though a cash flow model or staff and a project is ready and the expectation is that bonds will help advance a project, there is limitations with regard to RTC's ability to borrow. And that ability to borrow is that one, the borrowing must be done one within such that Measure D revenues are sufficient to pay back the borrowing and sufficient to pay back the borrowing within the term of the tax. So if sales tax revenues are higher at the time of borrowing, then the borrowing capacity would be greater. If sales tax revenues decline, then your borrowing capacity would be lower. Debt service and sale must be below the actual sales tax revenues. So, for example, assume an issuance, let's say in fiscal 2027, that issuance would have to, the term of the repayment would have to align with the term of the tax, which is 2047. And so that would be a 20-year debt issuance and repayment obligation if the bonds were directly aligned with the term of the tax. If you were to issue the bonds in a higher interest rate environment, your annual repayment would be higher. And if you were to issue the bonds in a lower interest rate environment, the annual repayment would be lower. And taken together, sales tax to debt service gets you to a bond term called debt service coverage. And in sizing your bonds, there's two important considerations. Is one, that total sales tax revenues more than exceed the debt service on your bonds. And that's kind of a pledge that you would make to bondholders. But importantly, as we think about the management of the Measure D program, we also want to make sure that sales tax revenues that are allocated to the highway program or active transportation are sufficient for that program to support the debt service associated with the bonds that may be issued for projects within those program areas. So all this to say, we would work closely within the cash flow model to ensure that debt service on a borrowing would not impinge on the direct allocation programs and revenues associated with the direct allocation program. It's just program revenues that where bonds are issued for those programs, we would make sure that those program revenues could also cover the debt service. So once RTC would be ready to issue bonds, and we've looked at if there's what the capacity is and what kind of the program could support by way of a borrowing, there's different borrowing tools and options to consider. And oftentimes transportation agencies utilize interim borrowing just to jumpstart some of the initial funding needs for larger scale projects. And those interim borrowing vehicles may even be like a line of credit with your bank. And it would just provide a lower kind of direct initial borrowing, mismatch between expenditures and revenues at the start of a project to jumpstart that project. Once there's more clarity around the project timing, and the project readiness, a longer term borrowing may be issued. And that longer term borrowing could fund not only project expenditures, but it could also repay any interim borrowing that may have been needed to jumpstart the project. So there's various tools, whether it's line of credits on the interim side, a long-term bond issuance on the longer-term side, as well as there's various federal loan programs and state loan programs that could be considered. So when we think about the debt issuance process, and I think largely why staff is starting these initial conversations around bonding, is that there is some lead time related to executing a bond transaction. And generally, we kind of approximate a 4 to 6 month timeframe from starting a transaction to actually pricing and closing on the transaction and receiving bond proceeds. So if staff anticipates the need for bond proceeds in the middle or the end of fiscal 27, that staff would want to start thinking about a bond transaction, you know, early to the mid of fiscal 27 to ensure proceeds would be available when needed. And the debt issuance process is really kind of finalizing and defining that borrowing need. Staff would work kind of with the necessary procurement requirements to bring on a financing team, being legal resources, advisors, underwriters, trustees. A plan of finance would be further developed and refined. And then the execution just requires putting documentations together, one, from the legal framework of a borrowing, but two, also a documentation that would serve as a prospectus or an offering document for bondholders should you issue bonds in the public market. You would receive a formal credit rating. The RTC does not yet have a credit rating for a sales tax borrowing. And then certainly in before being able to issue bonds, staff would have to come back to your commission to receive the approval to be able to issue, market and price a bond offering. So with that, I think Grace or Sarah would then touch upon just the next steps.
Commission in the fall as part of our five-year Measure D plan to think better, more closely about the timing of when those resources will be needed. We also anticipate that we'll have a request from the project sponsors for segments 9, 10, and 11 for additional funding for final design in the fall. So we'll be able to look at that holistically and bring that to the commission for consideration for borrowing.
Thank you. Any commission questions? Commissioner Brockton?
Yes. I just wanted to clarify again that the bonding takes money from the specific Measure D categories, not from Measure D overall. Correct me if I don't understand this, but in other words, you're going to go get money from future sales tax. It's going to come from the active transportation and from the highway accounts, not from the transit district or from the local roads and streets projects. Do I understand that correctly?
Correct.
Go ahead.
As Melissa said, that they would structure the bond so that the categories should be able to cover the debt service. The revenues will go directly to the trustee. And if there are any issues with covering it, then that would take from those. But that's why we're structuring it so that each category can cover their own debt service.
Thank you so much.
I'm sorry, Clark.
Yeah, a couple of questions are kind of interrelated here. But so as I understand it, we would issue a bond with a shovel-ready project where we're ready to go and start digging and paving. What happens in the event of cost overruns that exceed what your bond level is? Number one. And number two, you guys did a great job of kind of highlighting the benefits of this. But I'm also curious, what are some of the pitfalls or cons to this and some of the things we might be subject to? So,
thank you, Commissioner Clark. Sarah Christensen here. So, in terms of cost overruns, obviously we have to be careful about that. We've seen a lot of trends. We have multiple items on our agenda today about cost overruns for these two particular programs. So we should be planning accordingly. So, in terms of, I don't know if Kanan wants to add anything there. And then obviously the pitfall or the drawback of financing. Obviously, there's a significant amount of benefits, but the drawback is you do have to pay for debt service. So you have to pay interest on those loans and essentially, you know, potentially have less capacity to work with than if you were to go pay it as you go capacity. But then you get to realize those improvements early on and the public gets to start using the facilities. So there's obviously trade-offs.
I'd also like to add that I'm Tracy New. I'm your Director of Finance and Budget. So I'm.
No, you just need to speak into the microphone. There you go.
My name is Tracy New. I'm your Director of Finance and Budget, and I work on the cash flow model and with KNN on structuring the bonding. Another pitfall is that we have projections for Measure D revenues. And so if we don't meet those projections, that could affect it. But again, that's why we're structuring the bond. So we build in, and you can, the risk that you can only use the last 12 months of measure revenues as your basis. They don't allow escalation. So that's a really conservative way to make sure we don't rely on those.
Thank you. Any other questions? I just wondered, what is the interest rates currently? I know it's going to take us 4 to 6 months.
So conservative. I mean, you know, obviously rates are dynamic, but right now about 4.5% is a conservative estimate that we built into our cash flow model. Last year when rates were a little bit higher, it was 5%. So we also build that scenario into our cash flow model.
Thank you, Commissioner Sip.
I've had some experience with bonding in the school district, and I know that our bond rating was really important in terms of what our interest rates would be. So in terms of the RTC, do we have a favorable bond rating? And maybe that's for one of the other.
We do not yet have a bond rating. We would go through that process when we are getting ready to issue debt. We don't have a bad rating. We don't have any liabilities out there right now other than our pension and other benefits. I'm sorry, the last part of that.
No, I think you answered the question that it's our bond rating is coming, so we don't exactly know what our interest rate would be. I heard somebody touch upon it, but I don't know that I heard the right answer. But one of the things when I was in Washington, D.C. recently is I lobbied all of our legislators there about the 2% going from a zero interest bond to the 2% that the Trump administration wants to. That would be devastating for local communities across the nation. I don't know if I said it exactly right, but okay, good. Where are we with that right now? Do we know where that is going to land? or we're still waiting to hear.
And speak to that, but I also wanted to add to your question about the rating is that when we're rated, we'll be rated on the total measure revenues. And obviously we're going to be bonding based on the categories. We will have a very high debt coverage, you know, 5-6% times what we're bringing in. But we obviously wouldn't use all of the revenues in our model. But Melissa, do you have any comments on her question about the 2%?
Yeah, just on the rating, I would say they, and then I'll turn it to David on tax policy, but on the rating, I would say most of the transportation sales tax, your transportation sales tax peers that issue bonds are largely in the double A rating category. So the rating agencies in the bond market view this as a very high grade credit given the structure of the sales tax borrowing. And so that would be our expectation, certainly not making promises, but transportation sales tax agencies in California are really all rated within the double A category. And then David, do you want to speak just to the tax exemption dynamic?
Yeah. Thank you, Melissa and Tracy. That's a really good question. Obviously, it's on everybody's minds. What we're hearing so far is that if there is an effort to chip away at tax exemption to help balance the budget for other priorities, it might start with agencies like private higher ed and private hospitals. So there is the opportunity for the Stanford and Kaiser and Sutter Health and others like those to have access to tax-exempt bonds. They're sort of a specialty bond, a private activity bond of a sort. And the thinking is that perhaps those would be the first to be limited and sort of more traditional tax-exempt bonds that are used by the local government, cities, counties, states, special districts would not be in the target. But we really don't know. So that's what we are hearing so far. I'm not sure I followed exactly what the 0 to 2% was that you were referring to, but this overall concern about tax exemption is a big one, because if tax exemption were to be eliminated, you still would be able to issue your bond and fund your project, but you'd have a higher interest rate. It might be 2%, as much as 2% higher, frankly. The spread between tax-exempt and taxable, it varies, but it's in that range for, say, a 20-year bond. So that would add significantly to the cost of your debt, which I think Tracy or somebody pointed out is one of the negatives, if you will, of bonding, is that you need to repay the bond with interest, obviously.
Okay, so just to be super clear, because that, first of all, that presentation was excellent. We were just sitting up here remarking about how clear it was, and yet I'm still confused. So just for, and this for the public, really, as well as myself, for super clarity, what are we asking to bond at this point? Like, what is the total?
I think we had the numbers in a presentation, but it was for... we committed back in 2022 for City of Santa Cruz Segment 8 and 9 Coastal Rail Trail Project, Segment 10 and 11, which is the county's Coastal Rail Trail Project, Segment 12, which is the RTC's Coastal Rail Trail Project in Aptos Village, as well as the third phase of Highway 1, which is from State Park Drive all the way to Freedom Boulevard, auxiliary lanes and bus and shoulder improvements. The numbers we have in a slide, I want to note that those numbers do not include debt service. So those are programmed numbers. And so just, you know, yeah, thank you. $174 million total is anticipated. We've committed $66 million through, you know, the listed commitments that we've made. That doesn't mean that the delta is completely available. That means that, you know, depending on how much we need to bond and what the interest rate is and all these factors that we're going to be bringing more information forward in the fall about, that will inform how much capacity we actually have.
Right, because I know we're still waiting on the $124 million. Okay, so I wrote this down. So it sounds like maybe we're hoping to bond for $250 million. Am I right on that? about?
Commissioner Serpa.
Okay, because I just want this commission to know, like, what the exact number. That's a huge number.
Absolutely. So based on the commitments that we've made, it's about $140 million to bond. And we would be matching that with about $313 million in grants.
Okay. And we would need this money for that match.
Yes.
Is that my understanding?
Correct.
Yes. Okay, good. And it'll, the term sounds like it'll go to 2047. So that's 22 years. So if we take this money now, we're not going to have money later, right?
Correct.
Through Measure D, like that will be it through 2047, because we'll be paying these bonds back over that time.
We will know more about remaining capacity in the fall when we look a little bit more detailed at the numbers, how much we need to bond for and when.
Okay.
And this is a dynamic process. The way projects work is they're dynamic, and they're all based on cost estimates that are subject to change based on the market, based on, unforeseen delays and things like that. So we are going to be bringing more detailed information in the fall about timing and amounts.
Thank you. And just one last question. And thank you to the commission for allowing me. I know sometimes the agencies that help us get these bonds end up making a tremendous amount of money. So just for complete transparency, can you let us know what it is you'll be making at KNN? If you're the person, are you guys the agency that helps with the bonds?
Tracy, would you like us to answer that?
Please do.
Sure. Yeah, no, a really, really good question. Just real briefly, what our role is, and yes, we would presumably be involved. Our role is that of a municipal advisor, which is a role we have a fiduciary duty, which means we have to sort of put our client interests ahead of our own, meaning we're here to give advice, analysis, and protect your interest through the bond process. So we're one of the players. And then there are other players. If there's broker dealers, bond underwriters, our job, again, is to sort of hold them in check and make sure that the interest rates on your bonds are fair and appropriate at the time that the bond is issued. There's going to be two sets of lawyers, a bond and disclosure lawyer. There'll be a trustee. There's a variety of players. And I don't know exactly what our fee will be. I'm not trying to dodge the question. Once we know the plan of finance in the fall, perhaps, we will bring a complete package listing what we think all the costs will be for all the professionals, listing what we think the cost for the interest costs will be as well, you know, once we know the size of the bond and have a better sense of the market. So I hope that answers your question adequately enough for now. There will be more information, but it'll all be very transparent. I can assure you of that.
And David, that's a requirement of government code. Whenever a governing body approves a bond issuance, the state constitution requires that we disclose good faith estimate. And the estimates, not only in terms of the fees the RTC would be paying to third parties, but also the estimates for the cost of borrowing.
Thank you.
Commissioner DeSerpo.
Oh, Commissioner.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, as was pointed out, that, you know, the drawbacks borrowing, I mean, just not a lot of alternatives, right? I mean, if we want to deliver these large projects, we're going to have to bond in order to bring the money into the present so we can put a shovel in the ground. But as was mentioned, the drawback is, well, it costs money to borrow money. Do you guys, this is a question for our consultants at KNN, do you have any sort of rule of thumb? You know, if the interest rate is 5%, you're going to spend, you know, you have to spend whatever, additional 50% of, you know, if we need $100 million, you're going to have to spend another $50 million to get that money today. Is there, you know, any sort of general way that we could be thinking about this as a commission, how much we're going to have to spend on the borrowing costs?
Melissa, you want to try that? Or I mean, the answer is yes. We will provide you with very specific numbers, let's just say, on the interest costs. And we typically would add some cushion to that, assuming we come back to you in the fall, but you're not issuing for another year. So we want to sort of be careful and add cushion to the interest rate. But we can at that time do some sensitivity and say for every million or every 5 million or every 10 million of additional borrowing, that annual debt service goes up by X dollars. That's easy for us to do. I guess I hesitate to just throw out a random percentage right now, not knowing exactly what we're doing specifically. I don't know, Melissa, if you feel more comfortable trying to provide a relationship answer at this moment.
No, and I think Tracy mentioned your cash flow model, and generally she's including the interest cost as well as the repayment of principal within the model, and Tracy tends to use pretty conservative estimates for interest costs, which then that's just for planning purposes. And as you get closer to bond, the estimates will become more reflective of the current market.
And I might just add one other point, and that just is that we'll know more when we have the specifics and present the results of the model. But there should, of course, be some revenues available in addition to these debt finance projects, even after the bond going forward. There won't be as much because you're repaying the bond, obviously, with interest. But for starters, if there's any growth in the sales tax, when we size the bond, we, as was mentioned by Tracy, we wouldn't be assuming any growth. So debt service will be at a certain level, and then growth in sales tax revenues will be excess. But even beyond that, there's likely the way we're going to size that bond will have some cushion so that the debt service is below the amount of revenues expected to be received, even for the program that we're bonding for. So I would suspect that there still would be revenues for additional projects, maybe not an additional bond, I don't know, but at least for some pay-as-you-go projects in addition to the whatever amount was received for the bond. And again, more to come on all of that.
Okay, thank you. Well, since we have so many new commissioners, I'll just refer the last numbers that I've seen on this were from April 18th, 2024. I think you mentioned maybe a later update, but just to put this in context, it mentioned that if we wanted to borrow $20 million, that the lifetime cost of that would be $34 million. If we want to borrow $72 million, that the long-term cost of that will be $125 million. So, I mean, the more we borrow, we have the more we're eating into our total project capacity. And, when we talk about some of these very expensive projects and sort of escalating costs on all these projects, we're looking at a dwindling amount for any other projects that haven't been discussed because the bonding costs are really significant.
Thank you, Commissioner Kelly. Do you have a comment?
A couple of thoughts on this. I like this kind of bond financing, revenue bond financing for capital outlay.
Thank you for capital outlay projects for a couple of reasons. One is pay as you go is, it seems to me, not really an option in large capital outlay projects. The other thing is you borrow the money today, you have the money today, you invest the money today, and you pay it back with cheaper dollars later. I think that's one of the financial advantages of revenue bonds. I think secondly, there's a fairness issue in revenue bonds that I like quite well, which is that let's say you have a project, a capital outlay project, and you say, the useful life of that is 20 years or 30 years, whatever it might be for that project. I think it makes sense from an equitable distribution of the burden point of view to say folks who are using that for the next 20 years, et cetera, are all paying for it because they're now paying sales tax 10 years from now, 20 years from now, as they are continuing to use the project. The benefit of that project accrues to everyone. Seems like everybody should have the ability or the obligation to pay for it as you move along. So I think that revenue, this kind of financing is very tried and true. The argument that if you do something now, it cuts into available choices later on. I understand the argument. I'm not sure
that there's an alternative to that, though. If the alternative is pay as you go, then I think the argument starts to collapse. So I think this revenue bond measure is a good measure, or the concept's a good concept. Thank you.
Commissioner Schiffer.
Yeah, I just want to say that I sort of share the frustration of wanting more information now. What are we really talking about? What kind of interest rates will we be looking at? How much is it going? What are we going to be able to do? What are we not going to be able to do? But as I understand it, what's before us today was just sort of background on what the various bonding mechanisms could be and what are some of the consequences of those. So I think other commissioners would like to know more specifics. We just don't have that information in front of us. And what, as I understand it, we're being told is that we're going to get that information in the fall. And that's when we're going to have to make some hard decisions, because there are, as been pointed out, trade-offs. And it's going to depend on what we know about the cost of projects at that time and what we know about the cost of interest rates at that time, and what we know about the cost of actually doing the bonds at that time. And so I just think we're going to have to wait and see what the information is then, and then decide how we want to proceed.
Thank you. With that, I'm going to go out to the public. Would the public like to weigh in this item of the agenda?